Let's now look at what we eat, and the things we mostly find nowadays in the fridge are certainly brought into the house. All the food in our kitchen is bought, usually. Shopping is so everyday in our lives. But Shane Heaton is asking us to think about this a bit more, about the quality of our food and what it does to our physical being and our spirit. Shane is a food activist and spokesperson for the Biological Farmers of Australia. He is also the author of the respected Organic Farming, Food Quality and Human Health. His mantra is, "May the fork be with you." He joins us now.
Thanks, Jan. I wanted to talk about food, and the previous two speakers have spoken a lot about cities. I'd like to actually follow on from that, pick up on that, because cities have a bit of an issue with food security in the years ahead. It's good to hear from Italy because I've travelled a lot there also, and they have a food culture that's second to none and one that we could be envious of, and one that's actually a lot more sustainable than ours, perhaps. And it is because of this tyranny of distance of how far food has to travel to come into our cities. In the year 2000, I was living in London, a very large city, over 10 million people, and there was a trucker's strike over the price of fuel. On day one, milk and bread ran out. On day two, people started wondering, how long is this going to keep going for? I better stock up on a few things going down the supermarket. And on day three, the supermarket shelves were nearly empty. The strike broke, but the head of Sainsbury's supermarket chain advised the government that Britain was nine meals from anarchy, that the supermarkets only had a three-day supply of stock before the shelves would be empty if there wasn't continual supply coming in. Now, what would happen if that had continued for longer? The people of Cuba had to figure that out. In the 90s, they had a thing called the special period in Cuba. There was the end of the Soviet Union and a trade embargo from the US on Cuba that was prohibiting imports of fertilizers, pesticides and oil. Their agricultural system collapsed. A lot of people starved. The average Cuban lost 20% of their body weight. And they had to figure out, how are we going to produce food without fossil fuel-based inputs? Because the food system that we have in the modern world is very dependent on fossil fuels. We basically take between 10 and 1,000 calories of fossil fuel energy and turn it into one calorie of food. It's simply not sustainable in an era of rising energy prices. Oil and other fossil fuels are finite resources, and we're nearing the peak of production that is possible, and the demand is not slowing. So there is going to become a disconnect between the available supply and the demand. The price will go through the roof, and then everything that's dependent on oil and other fossil fuels, the price of it will go through the roof, and food is no exception. This is what happened in Cuba. They turned their cities into green spaces. They had urban farms, community gardens, rooftop gardens, backyard gardens, front yard gardens, on the street verge. They grew food everywhere. If your supermarket was empty, where would you get food? Ask yourself that. In 2008, the price of a barrel of oil spiked to $147 a barrel. It was the highest it had ever been. There were food riots in 20 countries around the world because it drove the price of agricultural inputs and foodstuffs, basic food staples, rice, wheat, soy, corn, through the roof. The prices doubled and tripled, and the world's poor simply didn't have access to food, and there were food riots. We need to think about how we're producing food, where it's coming from, and perhaps start relocalising our food production. In Bologna and other Italian and European villages, as they were in cities now, those dense city centres of three-storey homes with shops underneath tend to be surrounded by fields and farming, and the distances are a lot shorter. Our cities are not set up that way because they were set up at a time when we had cars and trucks and we could ship things a long way. So this is why I advocate organic food, because it's less based on fossil fuel inputs and it's a more sustainable system of agriculture. There's also a raft of benefits that come for the higher price. And yes, there is a higher price. But the average Australian household spends more every week on alcohol than on fruit and veg, spends more every week on takeaways than on fruit and veg, more every week on junk food than on fruit and veg. So is it really true that people can't afford better quality fruit and veg? I don't think so. And so the raft of benefits that you get from making that simple and effective choice of buying organic is that you're supporting organic farming, that's a more sustainable system of food production. Would you rather wait till there isn't available cheap oil like the Cubans did and starve or lose body weight? Or would you rather start thinking ahead and changing the kind of food system you support? You can vote every day with your fork. Every day, three times a day, every dollar you spend is a vote for the kind of food system that you want. So that raft of benefits that you also get with organics, it's got fewer pesticide residues, more nutrients, fewer food additives, better for the farmer who had to grow it and his family and his workers and his community, better animal welfare standards. You avoid genetic engineering. There's CO2, carbon sequestration in organic soils. Cities perhaps are designed by other people. Our food system is designed by you with the choices you make every day. Make them well.
Thank you, Shane. A couple of words here from Dan Hill.
I grow veggies at home and I can, on a good week, I can produce maybe 2 to 3 cherry tomatoes every 10 days or so. I love the idea of this, but I'm wondering how much we have to change about our daily life to do this. First of all, there's a kind of a skills gap, I guess, in that we all used to grow food at home. I'm talking several generations back, and now we don't. So there's just how do you do cherry tomatoes? Clearly, I'm not the person to turn to. Secondly, the layout of things. You talked about almost the idea that we can grow food everywhere, and we work on some projects around shared spaces for growing food, and there's a great project in Chippendale in Sydney, I think, where all the verges of the streets have been given over to productive plants rather than just sort of ornamental plants. So there's cherry tomatoes there. So you pluck a couple of tomatoes or some endives on the way home and chuck them in the salad. But again, sort of who looks after those? How does a community self-organise the tending of that kind of thing? And thirdly, then, I suppose just from the labour point of view, how much work does it take? If we get up in the morning, are we going to be tending the plants for a bit before we go to work? Do we have to change our daily patterns in some way as well to allow for this?
Well, in Cuba, it ended up being more than 50% of the population were involved in food production. Fossil fuels are a very dense and cheap form of energy. I've heard it said that we each of us have 8,000 slaves using the fossil fuel that we do. The amount of energy that we each use every day on driving somewhere or getting our food, that we've got the energy equivalent of 8,000 slaves working for us. So clearly things could and will change as energy becomes more expensive and we don't have the access to it that we do. So let's take backyard growing of veggies. It's a lot easier than you think if you make a start. Most of us can do this. If not that, you can engage with your community by having a community growers market. In my community, we have a growers market where backyard growers, including myself, sell their produce in our community. It's not a farmer's market of produce from elsewhere or even from the region. It's from our community of 6,000 people that your surplus in your garden, you can sell to one another. Makes a lot of sense. In Australia, we've got this very significant and problematic skills shortage with growing because the average age of farmers in Australia is over 60, and young people are not wanting to stay in rural areas and farm. And better to start practicing your growing technique now than when the supermarket shelves are empty, if that ever came to pass.
Thank you, Shane.